Cool.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. And I guarantee you, everybody's going to know somebody that can benefit from this subject. And this is just one powerful way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the world. Now, with all the negativity and divisiveness out there these days, I hope that you will find answersforthefamily.com a place that you and your family can go to hear some of the good and positive things that are happening all around the world. And with that in mind, if there was ever a time in recent years that we needed to focus on gratitude, self-reflection, and future vision, this is the time. So I'm going to start the show with what I learned as one of our guests' favorite quotes. Do what you can with what you have, where you are now. Okay, so, you know, with that in mind, you know, I think that we can all recognize that this world is changing fast. So just imagine being able to anticipate the future and finding your best and most successful direction. Well, our topic today and the title of our guest's new book is Future Vision, Your Working Life, 10 Strategies to Help You Get Ahead in Life. Now, our guest, Ann Jersch, is an international trainer and speaker and is best known as an intuitive and leading pioneer of future life progression, a technique that uses a blend of clinical hypnosis and visualization to guide clients into their own future to discover their best options regarding life choices. Now, Anne's FLP training company is now in 20 countries, and she is regularly consulted by business leaders, Hollywood directors, politicians, and so many more people for it. Now, Anne has appeared on numerous radio shows, having regular slots on Star FM and BBC Radio. She has also appeared on Kuwait Morning Television, Estonian Television, BBC Morning News, and most recently, The Morning Show, where she hypnotized celebrity Natalie Cassidy and took her into her own future lifetime. Anne, welcome to Answers for the Family.
What a fabulous show. Thank you very much. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Well, I am so glad to have you. And I've had a chance to start going through the book. I love what you're doing. It is so positive, and it reflects what we need so much right now. It's just one of those things that I not only feel good, but at the same time feel like I can see things that I can do or that I can share with other people that they can do to see more of their future and to see it in such a bright way. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Can I just say the quote at the beginning? I think that's Teddy Roosevelt. So I can't claim it. I think that was Teddy Roosevelt. Do what you can, where you are.
Yes. Well,
with what you have, where you are now. I think it's Teddy Roosevelt, but it really sums up that we flounder and we go, well, it will all be all right when we've got this and when I've got that and when that happens. Of course, them times might never come. Let's just do what we can where we are with what we have now. That got me through a lot of tough times.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense, and especially for right now. So I want to tell you that I have so many thoughts and questions for you, but before we get to those, can you share how it went when you hypnotized Natalie on the air.
It was actually really tricky because the host of the show wanted to get his ratings up. So he was quite a demon. He was really, he had to be there before show that day. And I went, oh, go for it. And he was a nightmare. But it was really, really good. But unfortunately, they didn't show the whole thing. They only showed little bits of it and went, oh, what about, you know, where the whole thing went really well. She actually saw in her future lifetime some amazing things, but they're a bit selective. So it wasn't my easiest interview. I'll put it that way. It wasn't my easiest, but it was great to do because, you know, it's national television. It's one of the biggest shows in England. And so, it opens people up. But, you know, I thought, God, a lot of people will really become aware of future life progression. I promise you, and this shows you how crazy the world is, we got more inquiries about the dress Natalie was wearing than about the work I did. I know. You've got to laugh, haven't you? Yeah. It could be a whole nother show. Yeah. But I think one of the things, we're living in a time where we're being taught to learn our priorities a bit better.
Yes. So share with everybody. I had a chance, obviously, to look more into your background and such, yeah. But share with the audience, you know, a little bit more about your background and, you know, how did you start out and what drew you to this career?
I grew up in London. I grew up in Notting Hill, which people are very impressed with because they've seen the movie. But when I grew up there, it was a slum. It was actually classed as a slum. It was very, very poor when I grew up there. But it was a lot of fun. You know, you don't know you're poor when you're a kid, do you? So we just really enjoyed ourselves. But in the summers, I'd go and stay with my grandmother, who read the tea leaves. She was actually an intuitive psychic. She'd read the tea leaves for people. And that, I'd copy her. I never got it right once. I was just, where my intuitive bone was, I couldn't find it. But I knew it did work. And what was useful about that was that I went in search and I've spent my whole life studying intuition, how it works. There's a lot of science these days to back it up. There wasn't many years ago, but there is now. But I went in search of intuition and discovered how it worked. Now, what's good about that is if you do something naturally, you don't know how you do it. You just do it. A great artist can rarely tell you how they paint. People who have studied art can tell you. So great chefs, people that do things naturally just do it. Mm-hmm. But I've learned processes. So I actually teach people how to get in touch with their intuition. I do think it's a natural part of us, but it's almost like we've got to learn what's natural because we've been brought up in schools. We're not taught to use it. So I spent my life looking into intuition and I was always fascinated by past lives. So you go back, you couldn't find training anywhere. You know, we didn't have the internet years ago and there was no spiritual books in the bookstore. Forget it. You know, there was one store in London, Watkins, which strangely, full circle, are now my publishers. How weird is that? Because we used to save up our money and jump on the train and it was like Aladdin's Cave, all these esoteric books. It was a phenomenal place back then. We were so excited to go. We didn't have a lot of money, but when we did have, we used to go up there. And we couldn't, I couldn't find a regressionist. I really wanted to know my past lives. And then the great, great woman, Denise Lynn, come over from America. She came over and did 800 people in a room at this big festival in London. This was many decades ago. 800 people in a room. Took us. We all went back to our past lives. It was mind-blowing. We didn't stop talking about it for weeks. It's mind-blowing. And so I thought, I have to learn this. And there was no training. So I studied hypnotherapy. I just thought, I ought to get some sort of a certificate, you know, because I was quite uneducated, but I thought, so I went and studied hypnotherapy and just started writing my own scripts and worked with hypnotherapy for many years until some military people came and they wanted to find out something from the past. And so we did a session to look at the past, only we didn't go back. We all jumped forward and we saw the attack on the Twin Towers. This was 3 weeks before it happened. And we were absolutely shell-shocked. we were pretty upset because we didn't have sight seeing a bird fall. You know, what's the point if you can't do anything about it? And so I started to think after a while, wonder if we can do this at will. So me and the military guys used to have sessions, and we kept predicting the future all the time, not the odd fluke. And then we started working with individuals, with people. And what there were several things that excited me. We'd take them to 5 years. Often they would call me up months later and say, it's happening now. It's as if we were bringing the best of the future into our current consciousness. And that excited me because we often take a long time to get to where we want to be. We often struggle to get, we go down the wrong roads. And to be able to fast track the best of the future, that excited me. It really did. You can really, really make a difference in people's lives.
So years from now, how many millions of people will have bought your book?
Not as many as I want, but I'm pushing that. I'm working on that, Alan. I'm working on that, but probably not as many as I want. But you know, my last books were out in, I think, 13 languages, so they did pretty well. But yeah, we need a few more.
Yes. So you know, as you're finding this ability, did your ability to use, you know, the future life progression or just your own intuition, how did that influence some of your choices, maybe, you know, why you decided to write the book or when to write the book? Because whenever you decided to write the book, we all know it takes a long time, but it's now coming out at a time in which I think we need it more than ever. So
yeah,
did you see something that said, you know what, now is the time?
But it's my fifth book. So I usually take about 6 months on a book. This one, I spent 3 years researching and 2 years writing. And what I was noticing, I could feel huge amounts of change coming up. And I could see people were starting to not cope. 5 years ago, they were starting to not cope with several things. One, the overwhelm with the amount of information, the amount of emails, the amount of stuff they're meant to be learning. Everybody seems to have far too many, always on a course, always reading, subscribing to everything. We're trying to do too much and we're getting overwhelmed and people are burning out. They were juggling too many things, kind of hedging their bets because they were scared of making the wrong move. They know the careers, because your career's going to change. Whatever you do, it's going to change. And so they, instead of finding out what they need and honing, they were trying to do several things, hedging their bets. I could really see the strains. I could see the structure of companies changing. So I started talking to people who always seemed to have the edge. And they were different. The way they thought were different. Steve Jobs and Elon Musk, they didn't make their decisions from their current time. They went off into the future and looked backwards. You know, in industry, they say to you, talk to your customers, find out what they want. That used to work. It doesn't work anymore. Nobody knew you wanted an iPhone back then. No, nobody knew phone apps because they didn't exist. Customers wouldn't have said, oh, I want a phone where I can watch a movie and book a flight. They wouldn't have said that. So we have to go into the future and find what we need there. It's like working backwards. We need to work backwards. So I started to realise we needed different strategies. People are actually lonely. They know, they're on their Facebook page. They know thousands of people, but they're lonely because we need our tribe. You know, when you was a kid and you had your mates, you had your friends, you've got that kinship. Today you can know thousands of people, but not have that thing where you both laugh at the same silly thing and nobody else gets it. We need that vibe. So there's a whole bunch of stuff we need today. And I just wanted to find out what we needed in order to thrive in the future. Really, really know that what we've done up to now is based our ideas of the future on what's gone before. That doesn't work anymore, does it? It doesn't work.
Well, your point is very well taken, and especially right now in this COVID era, you know, at least here in the States, suicide is up, drug abuse is up, alcohol abuse is up. Mm. You know, all of these things are on the rise. And when you brought up the thing about loneliness, you know, they're getting on the internet and it's like, great, you know, they'll look, I've got 5,000 friends or whatever. And, you know, you really don't. You know, you have 5,000 people that you can communicate with through social media, but that isn't necessarily a friend and the person that you're going to rely on or really talk about things that are intimate or that are vulnerable. So, you know, at this time and as this pace increases, because as we know, our pace is increasing, the constant amount of information is increasing. What are some of the recommendations that you would give that people can do on how they can handle the increase in pace and the information overload?
I just want to pick up on your point about addiction, because I wrote in my fourth book that addiction is the new big illness. It's the new plague, addiction. And it can be addicted to being busy. It can be addicted to drugs or drink or gambling or just being online. I think addiction is a massive, massive problem today. So what do we do about it? Well, I've got put in there a number of strategies, but I think mindfulness, stop it, you know, we're all going to regret not having slowed down, just sitting under a tree, just stopping. But what I want people to do is go into the future, find the best of the future and narrow it down. Absolutely. What we do is narrow down your future. Now, years ago on New Year's Eve, I'd write a long list of ideas and things I want to do for the following year, all my resolutions. Now it's more what I'm not going to do. So it's almost, we need to cut back. We need to learn to say no. We need to be okay not answering the phone, not answering all them pings on the phone, ignoring the emails. I think we've got to learn to just stop, sit under a tree. But with FLP, by narrowing down what you're going to do, you talk to people and say, what are your plans? And they'll just go, oh, well, I've got to write a book and I'm going to go on this course. Then I'm going to go on that course. Then I've got to do my blog. Then I've got this. You go, okay. And I used to do this. It all be laid out, all these things. And one day I turned it around that way and went, what's the one thing I need to work on now? One of the best books I've read in the last 10 years is Gary Keller, The One Thing.
Oh, The One Thing?
Yeah, Gary Keller. It's one of, I'm plugging somebody else's book here, but I tell you, that book stopped me in my tracks. I've got a copy up there and the pages are falling out. I go back to it and it just stops you doing so much. You're trying to see too many people, talk to many people, please too many people. It's about stop, find out your absolute best future and what's the one thing you need to do right now. Because you just worry about the next step. And once you've got the next step, worry about the next step. Don't try and do everything, just stop. And I'm the most guilty at this. I work stupid hours. And
I might have you on that one. I just might have you. And it's funny because I use the analogy that comes from the old variety show. So I'm of the age that I remember the old variety shows, and I call it spinning pie plates. And if you remember the person on the variety show, he'd start at one end of the stage and he sets a pie plate up on a pin and he spins it. And then he has about 20 of them and he goes down the line. And when he gets to the 20th one, that first one is starting to wobble and he runs back and spins that one. And he's running faster and faster and faster because if he stops at any moment, they all fall.
Yeah, that's exactly. So
my analogy of what I've tried to do after getting into that situation is to intentionally set some of the pie plates off. And just set it off and set it off and kind of do what you're saying is, which one of these are the most important or which ones do I need to put the majority of my time into? So I couldn't agree with you more.
Once you narrow down your future and you know what it is, you find that most things you're looking at, you don't really need. Most of it you don't. How much, and I bet a lot of your listeners are doing things they don't want to do, but they're pleasing people. Yeah. And it's a bad, and I know girls are worse than this than boys. The amount of times I've learned to say to people, oh, can I get back to you? I need to check my diary. Because the amount of times I've gone, yeah, I'll drive you to Scotland or whatever. Even, you just go, why did I do that? You know, we automatically say yes. And Warren Buffett said a little while ago, successful people say no more often.
Yeah, that's a great point. Now let's go back to intuition for a little bit. So let's talk a little bit about why it's so important. And do you believe that it's now more important today than it may have been 50 years ago?
Yeah. Well, if you go back to your ancestors, they use that. If you go back a long way, they use their intuition. That's how they stayed alive, wherever they were, jungle, desert, wherever they were. They use their intuition. They listen to the old man in their head. They listen to their instincts. They were doused for water. It was just a natural part of them. Then we came into that time when logic was the important thing. You use your brain. And if you're looking at the three brains, we went from gut, survival, to head. Everything's logical. I think now we need a combination of left and right brain. The right brain with the intuition, but I think we need a certain amount of logic. Some of the recent research has found that really successful people tend to use their intuition more. That has been huge amount of studies have proven that successful people use their intuition more. People that are struggling and don't get beyond a certain point are wading through reams and reams of paper and figures and trying to work stuff out logically. But the more recent studies have shown that by having a sort of outline and scanning a quick read of things and seeing what jumps out of you, having some information, then using your intuition works well. So it's kind of like you've got to make a decision on houses. Well, you need to have a quick look over the houses, but which ones? You have a quick look and go, well, that one's no good. It's only got two bedrooms. That one's too far away. I'm never going to get to work. You look at all the houses and then you stop and which one jumps out? Which one is my intuition shouting at me to walk through the door? So it's kind of a combination of both. So I actually think the old way and the new way is combining how we used to be. Less logic, but certain amount of logic, definitely using the intuition more.
So do you think that because of the information that's out there, we're using our intuition less? So for instance, you know, as a detective, I mean, there's a wealth of information now on the internet. I mean, you can find out just about anything. And is it almost like we're getting lazy, or we're allowing that muscle, that intuition muscle, to atrophy by not using it as much as we used to?
I think we're using it less, but I come back to overwhelm. By being so overwhelmed by information, by having so much going on in our head, so much noise around us, how's that intuition going to get through? How's it going to? We don't stop and sit under the tree or stop and listen. I've met many detectives, people in the armed forces, people in the police force. I've never met one yet that hasn't got a story where they've used their intuition, where they've said, I knew it's that person, or I knew something was around that corner, or I knew danger was up ahead. They seem to use their instinct and their intuition more. And I think it's because it's not so much laziness. I just think we don't need it so much. It's like our ancestors needed us. They're starved. When we know we're going to get food at the supermarket, probably not going to starve. It's very unlikely. But now, when things go wrong in our lives, our intuition starts to kick in. So you talk to people when they're having a really tough time or something's dangerous, it kicks in. It starts to kick in.
All right. We are talking with Ann Jersch. We are talking about her book, Future Vision, Your Working Life, 10 Strategies to Help You Get Ahead in Life. Now, we're going to take a break, but when we get back, and I'd like to talk a little bit about our inner creative genius. So you're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. With me is Ann Gersh, and we are talking about your future and what you can do to create and help bring you the very best future that you can possibly ask for. So let's talk a little bit about the inner creative genius. Now, is this something that we all have? And if so, how do we activate it?
Good question. Well, this started off with a study by NASA. NASA wanted to find the creative geniuses within their rocket scientists and engineers. And they brought in some scientists who devised a study. And indeed, they identified geniuses. Well, the scientists decided to roll it out to the public. And they started with small children. Wow, they found that small children, 97% of them were creative geniuses. Well, look at children. They just free flow. They just let their minds flow. But mm-hmm. as the years went on, they study 8-year-olds, 14-year-olds, the figures dropped and dropped. By the time they got to adults, I'm trying to remember, I think it's about 4% when we're adults, creative geniuses. So it's kind of fades as we get older. But the good news is they found they could see. Yeah, go on. So,
No. Let me ask a question, because you said it fades as we get older. But my concern is, are we educating it out of them, or are we dumbing it down? In other words, what are we doing that's taking that away? Because that's a huge problem.
Yes, it is a huge problem. The good news is you can get it back. What they found, there's been a number of studies, and I consulted a number of experts. That's why it took me so long to write the book, because I just kept talking to these amazing people. You need to feel safe in order to allow your genius ideas. And so, so say you go into a meeting with a bunch of people, how many of them would you feel comfortable actually coming up with a totally wacky, off-the-wall idea? At some point, we've had people go, "That's stupid. Oh, what are you thinking of?" I remember the first time I said I was going to write a book, I had a family member roll their eyes and go, "How can you write a book?" We've all had that in our lives. And when that happens, we pull back. Certain companies have created space, I think Google's one of them, that come up with the wackiest, maddest ideas possible, just let them out and everyone will listen and go, "Uh-huh, okay," and flow with it, because in amongst all the ideas, some of the wackiest ideas are the genius ideas. Mm-hmm. But little kids don't worry what other people think. They don't care. They don't care. They'll draw you with a rocket coming out your left ear. They don't care. So it's getting back to that safe space. And it's also learning to play. Go out and just giggle and have fun and draw crazy pictures and come up with mad ideas for a movie. It's about feeling safe, getting into that play mode. And when you take people into play mode, fun. One of the best people for learning about creative genius is a chap called Chris Burrows Brown. And when he did his TED Talk, he got everybody. Now, TED Talk, they're standing up, they give their very sensible talk. He said to everybody, "You've got a piece of paper under your chair. I want you to make a paper aeroplane." And he showed them how to make, and the whole room, there was just this packed audience. There's all these paper aeroplanes flying around the room. And they'd all sat there very sensibly waiting for their little talk, and all of a sudden they're all giggling and playing. And that's what we need to do, is get out there and have some fun and feel safe. And feel safe. So you often find the creative geniuses don't worry what other people think. But I think when we kind of let it flow, and I think part of that is coming back to your tribe, you know, Alan, because when you're around the right people, you feel comfortable with your ideas. So when you're putting on your show, you've got a bunch of people there, and you probably feel very comfortable going, "Look, this isn't what we normally do, but let's give this a go." And they'll go, "Yeah, let's do it." You know, and you'll feel safe to do that. Whereas if you're in some stern environment, they're going to go, "What?" We start to shut down. So it's feeling safe and letting it flow. But I do actually have a recording where I get people to go into the future and find their most genius idea. I put it in as an exercise in the book. Go into the future. do you know, Alan, just think, if everyone's got something genius in them, which I'm sure they have, and most people die with their music inside them, don't they? Most people don't write the book or paint the picture. Suppose that we just do it and let that out. So I take people into the future to find that genius idea. How did you make it happen? What does it look like? It's such fun. I've done it with artists. I've done it with musicians. I've done it with inventors. Go forward, find that genius idea and let it flow. Oh, it's just so cool when people just light up.
You know, I first of all, I couldn't agree more, and I love it. And it reminded me of something that I was blessed to be involved in, where the instructor of a class of a lot of creatives. So everybody in this class was a creative of some kind. And when it came time to the end of the class or the last class, everybody was going to come up, and it was sort of like their thesis or their final project that they were going to tell everybody. But what we didn't tell them was the instructor had me introduce each person as they would come up, only I introduced them as if it was the Academy Awards or the Grammys or the Oscars or the, you know, the Golden Globes or whatever. So whatever their situation was or whatever their art was, I introduced them as you would when they would win that award. And I would say their name and the winner of, and go into this whole thing. And we set it up to where the lights shifted at that time before they came up. And when they then did their final, the final chapter of their class or the final project, I saw there was so much more energy. They were on such a higher level. So the instructor of the class just did a great job of setting it up and chose me to actually do the introduction. But it was a wonderful thing. And I thought if they could do that in the classrooms, every public school, yeah. When you ask Johnny or Billy or Kathy or whomever to come up and to read that speech or to read that report,
yeah,
and introduce them as something that they see themselves doing in the future, you go from that fear point, because I can remember as a child going up and having to speak, and which made it even worse was the fact that I stuttered. So when the teacher said to come up and you're going to do this speech, I was so scared that it just got worse. But yet, had it been introduced as whatever it was that I was thinking at 8 years old that I thought I was going to be, and I was introduced as that person in my future, I think it would have changed everything.
I love that. Well, one of the exercises we do, got their future. So yes. if and I love that what you've done there, because it gives people that little bit of a feeling. Because when you feel it, you can make it happen. It starts to make it real, to give them that feeling. There's something in them that will say, I can do that. I like that feeling. I love that. That imagine doing that every kid at school. Yeah.
Yes. So, we're talking about these skills and we're talking about future, but what skills do you think people will need in the future? Because again, our skills have needed to change over the years. Oh, yeah. And because you've been able to now look in the future. So my guess question, what skills will people need in the future and how will that differ from the skills of today or the recent past?
It's a very interesting question because AI is taking over. It's already happening. Artificial intelligence is already doing a lot of jobs and people don't realize. When I say to them, when you talk to your doctor, he's reading off a screen. He's kind of asking questions that will go through to another. AI has already given you your consultation. When you phone your bank, you're talking to a robot. Now, that robot, let me tell you about that robot that answers the phone. Can you compete with this? That robot can take in 30,000 words in 15 minutes, process the information and answer questions. We can't do that. That robot can talk to somebody in India, in Toronto, in France, in Paris, anywhere. So we can't compete with that. We would act, a human actually is better, but you can't compete with the amount of information they can process. So robots are taking over a huge amount of jobs, far more than we realize. We won't have delivery drivers in 20 years' time. There's certain jobs that are just going to go. But this is the funny part. AI is rubbish at creativity. Absolutely rubbish. Look up AI and inspirational quotes. And there's a number of a website that will do that have AI generated inspirational. You will cry laughing. They are so bad. They'll have a beautiful picture like the one you've got behind you, beautiful picture. Then it will say, you live, you die. That's it. They can't create. They cannot be creative. The other thing is, you know, COVID has really brought this home, but we know it. Human interaction, being cut off. We want a human. We want to talk to a human. We need that human contact. And one thing I thank COVID for is it's really taught us how important people are in our lives. So that we need people to talk to, not everything. The way I want to look at it is that the AI can take over the mundane stuff and it frees us to do the stuff where we connect with people, connect with our tribe, use our creative genius. We definitely are going to need to use our creativity, our intuition and our human skills. That's the skills we're going to need in the future.
Well, and you're mentioning, you know, obviously with COVID and with the things that we're doing, one of the things that has caused is we have a lot more people working from home. Yeah. So, and it's a new experience for most of them. So as we do that more and more, and I think a lot of it's going to stick. In other words, even after COVID, people are going to realize that this is a good thing. What are some tips that you would give people that are new to this?
It's funny because to me, COVID's just the start of many much change, and we need to adapt and go with it. But that, you know, it's like there's a lot of people live on their own, and their only human contact was going to the shop and going to work. And people don't have the social life they used to have. You know, in my day, we'd always get together with our friends. People are becoming more remote, and a lot of younger people, they're just online. They're not meeting people. So I think working from home can be great. Certainly takes the stress out of all that commuting. It saves that time. It's less polluting of the world. But we still need to get together with people. I come back to finding your tribe. And your tribe will be connected to things you love, things you're passionate about. I think we need to find our tribe. We will need it. I think working from home is great, but we need to connect with people. Working from home is fine, but people go a little bit stir crazy when they have no human contact. So I think the human contact, but everybody can start breaking.
Yes, I completely agree. Now, knowing what you know now, what would you personally have done differently, or what would you have done sooner?
I would have definitely narrowed down and not got sidetracked so much. I definitely would have not been as busy. I would have honed far more. I've definitely juggled far. I'm the plate spinner like you, and I've just made myself far too busy doing things that weren't important. I would have learned to say no, and I would have narrowed down my work. I would have really narrowed it down. I definitely would have used my time better.
And again, as I've said earlier, I can certainly relate to that. And I've tried to pass down to my own children that, you know, here are some of the things, these are some of the mistakes that I think I've made. Hopefully you can learn from them and not make the same ones.
So we
have some listener questions that have come in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time to do this. We have lots of teachers. And even though they may not be working in the schools, I think a lot of them are still working online. They're not able to. This show is still in the middle of the day. So we get a lot of them that will say, look, I subscribe through iTunes or whatever, YouTube or something. And they'll say, you know, can I send you in this question? I can't listen live, but I'll be able to listen later. So I love the fact that we always get some and they take the time to do this. So this one reads, my husband and I are struggling on many levels. And I just purchased your book because what you speak about feels like what we need. Since the virus hit, we have been working for our employers from home. Both of us are worried about room layoffs, news about the COVID-19, the next wave, the continued restrictions, and of course, this disgusting political battle for the election. I know that I am only one of many millions who are worried about our future. What is your take on the fear? Can we get past it? And if so, how? And this is from Lucy in Illinois.
Lucy, you know, I really relate to what you're saying. And I very rarely get, because my timeline on Facebook's full of people arguing about politics and virus and whether you should wear a mask or not. They just row all the time. They drive me mad. But I did actually post something up the other day, because on the 6th of August, apparently, we had our first day where there was no deaths attributed to COVID. Not one newspaper or media outlet bothered to mention that. Not one. That should have been a big headline. Wow, after 1,000 deaths a day, look, there's none today. Look how much. No, none of them bothered to mention that. Absolutely infuriated me. But what they're doing, we're testing more people. Because we're testing more people are showing the virus. So that's all over. Oh, the figures are going up. Of course they're going up. You're testing more people. What they're not mentioning is that the virus is much weaker now. Far less people are being hospitalised with it. They're not mentioning that many of us have T cells that give us a real big resistance to it. So it's all bad news. The papers, when I was growing up, used to tell you the news. Now they just want to freak you out so you buy their papers. So they horrify me. What you need is to be adaptable. We are going to need to be adaptable. Your work will change. I can tell you're a smart person. I can feel you're smart. Don't buy into the way. Those that adapt and those that are brave will thrive. The people that won't thrive are the people who try to hang on to the old way and buy into fear. But don't take too much notice. Do you know what my dad used to say? He used to say, in a political system, every so often one lot get in, then another lot get in. He said, but over about a 50-year period, there's some sort of balance. And I thought that could be right. Nothing much changes. If we didn't watch the news, if we didn't listen to it all, our life don't change that much, whoever's in. It really doesn't filter down that much. I would ignore it. Stop watching the news. COVID is dying out. It is, you know, there might be a little bit of a wave coming up, but the countries that have had it bad, they haven't had a huge second wave. It hasn't happened. It just hasn't. And they're ahead of us in time. What I'm doing, I've gone to work every day. I've trundled from my house to my office. I'm not coming in contact with people. I'm dealing with people online. I've just gone to work, kept myself busy. If I go to a shop, I put a mask on. That's it. Fair enough. I keep my hands clean. I do what I have to do to kind of go, okay, but I've carried on with my life and I'm not listening to the news. I only listen to one person to do with the virus, and this is Professor Sikora. He's the most measured, sensible, balanced person, and I'll ignore everything else. You know, if you, Sophie, and your husband, just get on with your work. Do amazing work. For you, put the energy out and inspire the people you're teaching. And if you have to work in a different way, you're working it, just go and inspire people and you'll be like a lighthouse to them. You'll be like the lantern. When we internalize, we freak ourselves out. When we put the energy out, we inspire. Imagine if we all put out that energy and just inspired people. God, no, come on, we'll just work a bit different. Come on, you can do it. Imagine that spreading all over the world. People would rise up. They'd be much more comfortable. But people, one of the things online, people are spreading so much fear online, and it's not cool.
Yeah. Again, I agree with you completely. And, you know, and just to add to that, you know, for everybody out there listening, you know, as far as everybody, you know, follow the science. Well, following the science, one of the things in science is that fear breaks down your immune system. It actually makes you weaker. So the fear that they are putting out, they are contributing to people being weaker. So more people are going to get it by what they're doing. So I agree with you completely. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, don't take care of yourself. Yes, take care of yourself. But one of the ways to do that is build your immune system. You know, take your vitamins, go outside, get sunlight, ground. Yeah. stay hydrated, do all of these things, which is exactly what the politicians and mainstream media should have been saying. But the problem is that doesn't sell airtime and that doesn't sell newspapers. So
you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yeah. Fear. Don't buy into the fear. Just spread a bit of joy. Do an amazing job with the kids. You'll be fine.
Yep. Now we have another another questioner's comment coming in. This one says, it says, I really like that you referenced the word intuiting in your summary that I read on the Answers for the Family website. My daughter, who recently completed her degree, is having questions about her next steps in starting her career. She has several directions she should go in, but wants to make sure that the path that she steps onto is the right choice long term. Her birthday is coming up. I thought a copy of your book would be a wonderful gift. I was wondering if young people like her are purchasing and reviewing your book. And if so, could you talk about some of the experiences that they've provided with their reviews? And this says, thanks from Wendy in Boise, Idaho.
Okay, so I do a lot of work with young people trying to find their path. And it started off with a woman in Norway. I've got a lot of followers in Norway. And a mother contacted me and said, my son's always been so into chemistry. As a kid, he'd have the poster of the chemical elements on his wall as opposed to a pop star or something. And then right at the last minute, he decided he wants to do psychology. I just don't want him to make a bad move. So she brought her son on and I did a session taking him forward. First of all, seeing him doing chemistry, I took him forward to him studying and then further on working. I took him into studying social science and then working. And then I took him to a third future. I just went, just see if there's another one. He said, there isn't. I went, let's just see. And he found a third one, which was green studies. And the boy lit up. He said, that's my path. So we can actually take young people forward. And I've actually got a team of my people working on this right now. But if you contact me, I'll send you a recording where your daughter can see her best future. If any of your listeners want a copy, just drop me an email and I can send it over to you, just andjersh@gmail.com. And I'll send you a free copy of the download. Go and find your best future. I put this together. We're actually developing something for teens right now, because how are you supposed to know at that age what you're going to do forever? How are you supposed to make such big decisions? And we can make a big difference and help move off to uni very confidently. It's a very important part of our work. We've also done some work in the townships in South Africa. It's going to be an important part. I've got two high-level teachers that I'm working with. One of them works with kids that have had problems. The other one is trains teachers. I'm leaving most of that to them because I'm not qualified, but they are. And we're developing methods. But yeah, give me a shout, andjersh@gmail.com, and I'll send you a copy of your daughter to find her best future.
Can you also send that to Jan and I, and we will post it on our site as well.
Yeah, sure.
So that people can check it out there. Again, for everybody out there, I highly recommend that you get the book. There's nothing really that you can do better than to be able to help set up yourself or your children, your grandchildren, whatever, for the best possible future that they can find. So, Anne, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. We'll talk again off the air about some of the other stuff. And again, anytime, please let me know. That I'd love to have you come back on. If you've got another book coming up, we want to have that as well. If anybody out there, if you weren't able to write down the website that she just said, if you go to, again, our answersforthefamily.com, we will have it there for you as well. We'll set up a link and so that you can all not only go to her site, but get a copy of that particular video.
Brilliant. So, Anne, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Now, for everybody out there, in a time when many people's lives are upside down, with everything that's going on, comes a story of an artist who loses her ability to practice her art and how she discovers herself in an uplifting climb out of a world she believes to be the only world possible and into a world far better than she had ever anticipated. So be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday as author Susan Priver describes her book, Dancer Interrupted. Now, please, for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. And remember, you can subscribe through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, YouTube, Speaker, or SoundCloud, or all of them, and they will send it to you. They will put it on your device for you, so it'll be there waiting for you. And remember, if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know that I greatly appreciate it. And remember, the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and continue to spread the word. We are focusing on putting out the word of good, positive, great, and wonderful things that are going on in the world, and this is exactly what we need. So it isn't about us, but it is about us being able to shine a light on those people that are doing wonderful things out there. So for everybody out there, just remember, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.